I really enjoyed our conversation after the Collision Conference and just hearing about what the Women in Technology group does. And so I think it's a great fit for me to come chat with you this morning. And it's definitely meant to be an interactive session. So please jump in as we go through everything. We're going to talk through scenarios, and I want to hear your experiences as well. And that's how, you know, we're all just going to learn from each other. And that's really the goal of today. So I will give a little bit of background first about, you know, how we define bias and the main types of bias that affect women. And the session we're going through is called the 50 Ways to Fight Bias program. And this is a program that Lean In developed, and it is meant to touch on really, there's 50 scenarios that they've developed that touch on the different ways women face bias in the workplace. And it's a program that can be implemented at any organization. And so this is just a small piece of it. We're going through six scenarios today, just given the time. But I think it'll be really, I think you'll come away with some tactical ways that you yourself can both fight bias, but also educate others on how to fight bias in the workplace. And we know that calling out bias is important, and we know that bias affects women very negatively. It holds women back in their careers, whether it's intentional or otherwise. Bias can make it much harder for women to get hired, promoted, have access to senior leadership, and then also in their day-to-day lives. And more studies have come out showing that bias actually hurts companies when equality and equity come at its expense. So that's what we're going to focus on today. I also want to highlight that, you know, this workshop, yes, I believe we're all women here today, but it is meant to include men in the conversation. We're not trying to blame. We're not trying to, you know, point fingers. We need them to be part of this conversation, and they play a really meaningful role. So it's more about, you know, educating everyone on how we can all work together to fight it. So a little background about me. I won't reiterate my bio, but if you are familiar with Lean In, you know that it started with Sheryl Sandberg. She wrote a book in 2013, which sparked a movement. And now there are, I believe, 44,000 Lean In circles around the globe in 170 countries. And this picture is from the Leaders Conference in Palo Alto. I was there last year with Sheryl Sandberg in the middle. And, you know, we just all come together, a group of really inspiring women who are going to learn from each other and especially learn from different cultural backgrounds and the different challenges that each country leader is facing, and come together and develop further ideas and the further learnings about bias and also women's empowerment. And when we all come together, you know, the stories that I've heard as I was president of the Lean In Toronto chapter, where I was president for 2 years, and yes, I did recently step down to sort of pass the baton to the next group of women to lead, but the stories that I hear are remarkable. Women share their stories, their challenges. They talk to me about the adversity they face often daily in the workplace. You know, we hear about women being passed up for promotion or interrupted during a meeting or, you know, brushed off as junior. And this is really why Lean In was started, to build a network of support to empower women within their careers and help sort of push through all of these biases that women face. So my contact information is there. Feel free to connect with me. I love continuing these conversations, so definitely feel free. So getting into our agenda for today, we're going to do, you know, a quick introduction, set some sort of ground rules for today, just reminders that I want you to be aware of as we go through. I'll go through the types of bias that we're going to talk about at a pretty high level, and then we'll jump into the scenarios. And in that, while we're working through the scenarios, I definitely want this to be interactive, so please jump in. I don't think there are too many of us, so it shouldn't disrupt anything, but definitely jump in with your questions, comments, or even to share your experiences. Then we're going to talk about our one action, and that's the one thing that you're going to commit to and take away today to either work on within your organization or help educate others. And then I'll give you a little bit more detail on continuing the conversation. So before we get started, wanted to, like I said, go through a few reminders. This workshop is meant to be, encourage self-reflection, be open, respectful, have those conversations, but also know that it's a safe space to do so. So the first reminder, bias is not limited to gender, and we're going to get into this in a little more detail, but we know that women can experience bias because of any aspect of their identity, race, sexuality, religion, or definitely there's many others, and that compounding discrimination can be significantly greater than the sum of its parts, and that's the intersectionality piece, so we will get into that. Next, we want to give people the benefit of the doubt. So remember that everyone's here to learn and do better. So have that open and honest exchange. And we're not here to blame. We're not here, to say, men are the enemy. We're here to learn and grow. That is the opposite of what we're trying to do. So definitely have those conversations, but keep in mind that we're looking to make change and grow, not to necessarily point fingers. And it's important to know that we all fall into bias traps. So we might think, men are usually the culprit, but it's not actually the case. People of all genders, consciously or unconsciously, make biased comments or behave in ways that disadvantage women. So I encourage you also to look inward as we move through this and recognize your own bias that might come into play. Knowing that bias exists is certainly not enough. So we have to look for those ways to counteract it. And that's why these scenarios provide those really tactical ways that you can make the change. And then finally, everything I'm going through is rooted in research. So the stats, data, anecdotes, everything presented is based on research from leading experts from Stanford University, from Paradigm, which is a diversity and inclusion strategy consulting firm, and also from the Lean In and McKinsey & Co. Women in the Workplace study, which if you haven't read it, I encourage you to. It comes out every year. And all of the scenarios that we're going through have been reviewed by these experts to make sure that first, they're the most common and impactful scenarios that women go through, but also that they're the most common types of bias that women face. So making sure they're very relevant. And all of the sources I can share, certainly, but they can also be found on Lean In's website. So let's go through the type of bias. And please, if I'm going too fast or you want me to pause and talk about something, please jump in. But when we look at the five most common types of bias, we're going to cover these are really what Lean In and McKinsey and the other research partners deem as the most common that women face and certainly the most impactful. So the first is performance bias. And this is rooted in incorrect assumptions about women's and men's abilities. We tend to underestimate women's performance and overestimate men's. And as a result, women have to accomplish a lot more to prove they're as competent as men. And this is why women often get hired on past performance, meaning they need to prove that they already have the right skills versus men who are often hired based on their future potential. This is performance bias. Next is attribution bias. This is closely linked to performance bias. And because we see women as less competent than men, we tend to give them less credit for their accomplishments, but also blame them more for their mistakes. And we don't always recognize the work that they do. And so even when women and men work together on tasks or projects, women often get less credit for success and are blamed more for failure. Next is the likability bias, and this is rooted in the age-old expectations where men are meant to be assertive. So when they lead, it feels natural, and then women are expected to be more kind and communal. So when they assert themselves, we like them less. This is also known as the likability penalty, and this often surfaces in how we describe women. We tend to be more described more as, too aggressive or bossy. And these are words that are rarely used to describe men in the workplace. Next is maternal bias. And this is one of the most common forms of bias that women face. Motherhood triggers a whole host of false assumptions that women are less committed to their careers and even less competent. And as a result, mothers are often given fewer opportunities and are also held at a higher standard than fathers. Affinity bias is what it sounds like. We tend to gravitate towards people who are like ourselves in appearance, beliefs, backgrounds, and some may even avoid or dislike people who are different. And this plays out in several ways in the workplace. For example, with mentorship, some mentors will say they're attracted to protégés who remind them of their younger selves, for example. And then finally, bias is not limited to gender, and this double discrimination can show up in all of these types of bias. And we know that women can experience bias due to any aspect of their identity. And, you know, compared to white women, women of color receive less support from managers, get less access to senior leaders, are promoted more slowly. And as a result, women of color are particularly underrepresented in the corporate pipeline behind white men, white women, and men of color. We're going to get into it a little bit more when we talk about a scenario about really what the detrimental effects of this are. But a similar dynamic as women of color holds true with LGBTQ women, where research shows that lesbians, for example, have a harder time securing employment than women more broadly. So this one, again, the compounding effects can make all the other types of bias just amplified completely.
Nicole, sorry, yes. Can I go back a little bit to the performance bias? And it's something that I know that we have come up a lot kind of in some of the discussions, is that performance bias a lot of times I think is brought on, and this is not kind of generalized statement, but by women ourselves. And I think it's because we underestimate a lot of the things that we're capable of doing, you know, and you talked about women are looked at past performances and men are, okay, what can they do? Mm-hmm. And I think even as women, you'll look at a job application or you look at a possible job and say, geez, I only have 8 out of 10 skills, where men will go, whew, I got 3. I can nail this one.
Yeah.
So how is that something that even as women, because we do that to ourselves, can we overcome some of that?
Yeah, it's certainly a great point. And that's definitely where the imposter syndrome comes in as well, where women don't think they potentially deserve to be sitting at the table or in that role. And you're absolutely right about that stat. I believe that women will only apply if they meet 100% of the criteria, which when we're looking at job descriptions, that's nearly impossible to meet every single piece of that, of what the company is looking for. So it definitely is that imposter syndrome coming into play, but it's also the messages that we're hearing from externally that, you know, we might have heard our whole lives where, you know, in school, the boys are leaders, or they're given the better projects, or you know, if we're a little quieter, we might get talked over and not able to share our ideas. So it's ingrained from a really young age, but also when we get into the corporate world, it plays out every day with these small, they're even like micro, I don't want to say microaggressions, but they are micro biases that come into play that just reinforce that idea that women shouldn't be considered as, you know, as competent or as able to achieve the same level as men. And so when we look inward, I think it's about finding, I definitely know that finding that network of support. And through Lean In, I certainly have it in all of the other organizations I work with, to talk through these things. Because once you start talking to women who have similar experiences, you realize that it's not necessarily your issue. It is a systemic issue, but also figure out ways to overcome that. And confidence is definitely one piece of it, but also, you know, just keep pushing through that noise of the bias, and hopefully the company will also come around. But it's definitely an internal battle, I would say, that needs to be fought to understand that, yes, you are absolutely as capable. I hope that answers.
Yeah, no, thank you. It is good.
Great. Okay. So if we move to our warm-up, we have a good understanding of bias. And now I'm going to take you through a few high-level scenarios that I would love for you to jump in and try to guess sort of what the answer is. So the first one, in a study of performance reviews, what percentage of women received negative feedback on their personal style, such as you can sometimes be abrasive, and what percent of men received the same type of feedback? Does anyone want to come off mute and guess what these percentages are?
Now, is this feedback from managers? Is that what that would be?
Yeah.
I would say maybe 65% of women to and maybe 30, like about a 30% of men.
Mm. Yeah. So you're close on the women, way off on the men.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really unfortunate. And I've witnessed this for sure, where this is where sort of likability bias comes in, where women tend to be called aggressive, bossy, and research shows that they receive that sort of performance feedback and includes comments on their personality, whereas men rarely receive similar feedback.
So women sorry, I was going to say, I'd be really curious on this, and do you have an idea of the managers that are giving the feedback, whether the managers themselves are male or female?
I believe in this one, it was a study of both. Yeah. So I can definitely pull more information here, but this is definitely not just male managers.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, we see that bias is not limited by gender in terms of who's displaying it. Yeah. So yeah, definitely an interesting one. So the next one, how much more likely are women than men to plan on leaving the workforce to focus on family? Any guesses there?
I think that today is starting to shift, and there are more men that are leaving the workforce to focus on family, which was probably not the situation 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, okay. Yeah, Susan, there's virtually no difference. And that was exactly my point, is that there's definitely been a shift in normative gender roles when it comes to childcare, which is definitely a positive thing. But as of right now, and this study, women and men planning to leave the workforce to raise a family, is there's no difference right now. So very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Next, when 1 in 10 senior leaders at their company is a woman, what percent of men and what percent of women think women are well represented?
I would say men think, like with that stat, I would say it would be more men. So maybe about 90% of men think it's well represented, but in terms of women, I don't know if that would be high, maybe 50 to 60% of women.
I would think that probably it's a much lower. I think that there is a shift today in men's perception. And I think that 1 in 10 senior leaders as a woman is not yet enough, even in men's perspective. Yep. So there are positive things that are happening in that respect.
Good. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, the answer is 45% of men think it's okay, and only 28% of women. This surprised me. I actually thought the gap was going to be larger, but either way, we know 1 in 10 women is not enough, and so you know that's why we're here to help that.
I'm surprised at the 28% of women. Like I would think that there would be more women that would think that this is really not enough. 1 in 10,
exactly,
not good enough.
Yeah. But this just shows that, you know, we're as a you know, total society, and granted these numbers are mainly based in the US, but we still see that the bias could potentially come into play with women as well, where they see men as leaders more so than women.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and this is our last warm-up question. So what percent of women have experienced workplace microaggressions, like everyday sexism, like being mistaken for someone more junior or having their competence questioned?
A lot. Yeah. I could say that a lot.
Yeah, you know, I'm just going to jump ahead. So it's 64% based on the study, but honestly, I don't know any woman who has not experienced bias. So I was actually surprised at how low this was, but nonetheless, that's why we're here. We're going to talk about how we can change it. Okay, so now we're going to jump into our scenarios, and please, I do want you to jump in as we go through. I will mention the scenario, I'll talk about why it's important, and then we can have a discussion around it. So this first one, a woman suggests an idea in a meeting and it falls flat. A few minutes later, a man suggests the same idea and gets an enthusiastic reaction. So we know that getting credit for ideas is important. It's often how employees get noticed. And when we don't feel heard, we stop speaking up and sharing our views. And then over time, contributions go unseen. And then that can slow the advancement of women. So it does have a trickle down effect. And then companies end up missing out on perspective and valuable ideas. So I'm going to open it up. I saw some visceral reactions to this statement, maybe some common experiences, but does anyone want to speak to this?
Get called out, like at a meeting where someone literally says, hey, I just said that 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it depends on the company culture, but I think like in my group, we would call it out.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's great. And that certainly is the goal, is to like stop it from happening. So I'll switch to the next slide that talks about what you can do. And it's just that, Diana, it's remind everyone that the idea originated with the woman and say, you know, I think Diana made that point a few moments ago. Let's discuss it. And so that's how you can both, if you are in that situation where you witness it, advocating for women helps them get noticed, but it can also make you more prevalent as a leader because you are, you know, championing this person now. And this is compounded by underestimating women's performance and overestimating men's potentially. And, you know, we often don't give women credit for their ideas. And in meetings, this is how it plays out. The team doesn't necessarily hear the idea that a woman raises, but when a man says the same thing, people pay attention. Again, this is rooted in attribution bias, where we think that women's contributions are less valuable. Another way this plays out is that women are more likely to be talked over and interrupted. And in one study, men interrupted women nearly 3 times as often as they interrupted men. And actually, women fell into the exact same pattern. So women are interrupting women more often than they're interrupting men. So it's definitely something to, you know, maybe watch yourself for and make sure it's you're not contributing to it. And I find with this sort of virtual world we're in now, it's a lot harder because on Zoom, it's, you might not mean to interrupt someone, but it's hard to tell when someone's about to talk. But it's definitely even something to consider in this virtual world as well. All right, if there's no more comments on this scenario, I'll move to the next one. So you realize a colleague who is a man only mentors other men. And this matters, of course, because mentorship is very critical to success. Everyone benefits when we have, you know, a colleague or a leader showing us the ropes and sponsoring us for new opportunities, and particularly when that mentor is more senior. So if a coworker only mentors men, the women he works with are missing out on his advice and potentially on opportunities to advance. And he's also missing out on their best thinking because they might not feel comfortable with it.
In this case, I would hesitate to call this out because it could be that it's the mentor's level of comfort to work with a woman or something like that doesn't feel, you know, with sexual harassment and things like that at the workplace, maybe they don't feel comfortable to have this one-on-one time with women as a good scenario. So we you could suggest, you could try to, I wouldn't say aggressively, but a little bit more pushing, trying to get into that mentor. But if there's still a resistance, I would just drop it and go and find mm-hmm. someone else. That, because at the end of the day, I don't want to force someone to mentor me. I would like them to want mm-hmm. to mentor me. Yes. And if they don't yes. want to, I just yes. drop it.
Yeah, it's definitely a great point you bring up. And in terms of, you know, Me Too and this era that we're in, and men do feel uncomfortable, a lot of them, mentoring women or working alone with women. There are opportunities to, you know, suggest public places to meet. There's always ways around it. Mm-hmm. But I agree. I do think you can push it to a certain extent, but perhaps not fully, because if you're right, if that mentor doesn't want to, then the relationship between mentor and mentee is not going to be successful. So let's talk about what you can do. I do think there's an opportunity here to talk to that person and explain the importance of it and just share your observations if you're comfortable. You can recommend a woman, you can recommend he mentors at least one woman, but also help him identify candidates that might be good. And of course, this happens because we're drawn to people with similar backgrounds, and this disadvantages people who are not like us. And I did have a note here about, you know, feeling uncomfortable with being alone with women, and point out that there are plenty of public spaces, and that mentorship of all genders matters. And it could also potentially look bad on him, because if he's only mentoring men, then he could be sort of pigeonholed into, you know, this is what he does, and is not inclusive of who he's going to, you know, bring up within the company. So there's an opportunity to flip it that way and talk about his own personal leadership. And of course, this is rooted in affinity bias. So the next scenario, you're on a hiring committee and a colleague rules out a woman of color because she's not a good cultural fit. So first and foremost, this is racism. We need to call it what it is. We have to move beyond just calling it bias. If a person is being judged negatively because of the color of their skin, it's racism. So while this example shows the compounding impact of bias against women of color, it could also mean that the organization itself is overlooking women of color for new roles or promotions, and they may have a systemic issue of racism that needs to be addressed. So if we look at this scenario specifically, there are ways to combat it. And we know that this in itself is, you know, detrimental to both the candidate, but also the company, because it means the company's not having diverse teams. And again, this could be the views of one individual, but it could also be systemic. So if we look at what you can do, if someone rules someone out because of cultural fit, ask them to be specific. And asking them to be specific points out that their behavior is a problem, and it forces them to acknowledge their own bias and prejudice. So get them to explain what they mean by this. If they say something like she's different, point out different could be good. And if cultural fit is the reason, propose that person is added to the team dynamic instead of simply fitting into it, which a lot of companies unfortunately still do, but really they should be looking at fully diversifying, not even just based on race, but on all other aspects of identity, diversifying their workforce. And as a longer term solution for this scenario specifically, a set of standardized criteria can be used for hiring, so that if it is just a managerial problem with that person, their subjective evaluation will be removed because now they're using standardized criteria. And if it is a more global issue within the company, then it forces everyone to use the same set of criteria. So that's this scenario specifically. And of course, double discrimination and intersectionality for women. But it's so critical that we're aware of these different biases, prejudice, racism that women can experience. And the organizations need to commit to making that change. And it shows up in so many different ways. And one example of that is tone policing. Women experience this, but Black women especially are toned police more than any other group. And this needs to be called out. Does everyone?
What does that mean?
So tone policing is women experience, but I'll talk about Black women specifically, are called out based on how they say something as opposed to what they're saying. So it's their tone they're using. So if their tone is, you know, if they're really passionate about something or if they're trying to get a point across, they will be acknowledged for, well, why did you say it that way? Or you shouldn't have said it that way, as opposed to the actual ideas and words they're putting forward.
But that's not necessarily only towards women or women of color, because I know that coming from a different background than the typical Canadian background, I have more of a Middle Eastern background. We are very, very passionate about what we say and how we say it. And there are people that feel that this type of conversation is an aggressive way, the way that I present things, but that's part of my nature. So it's not necessarily only Black women. It could be from different cultures, Italians and again, I don't want to call out specific, but again, from my experience as someone who has a very strong Middle Eastern background, we always yell at each other. That's fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you are 100% bang on. It definitely, if we look at broader cultures as a whole and backgrounds, it's the deviation from the North American and how exactly. And so that's where it becomes a problem, because if we're trying to create diverse teams and we start saying, oh, well, you're not conforming to, you know, how we do something, and maybe it's, you know, maybe it's historically white men who are in leadership positions. And if you're deviating from that, the company, quote unquote, won't like it. So, go ahead.
Or I would go to the other side of the spectrum. And again, I don't want to racialize anyone. There is no intention to do that. But I think that more Oriental types, they're more quiet and they're less aggressive. They're more, you know, calm and zen, and they're not pushy enough to push their agenda into a conversation. So they may come over as not as aggressive as they're supposed to. And when they do push their agenda, it's like, whoa, where did you come from?
Mm-hmm. And
sometimes I was going to say it's based on other languages that you speak. Sometimes I hear Chinese. To me, it always sounds like it's more like yelling. It's very first to cut out the word. So then when that person starts speaking English, that intonation comes across as well. So there's all like, variety of reasons, you know, differently, or, you know, some people just get excited or enthusiastic and get, you know, like I always sometimes think then when it's not face to face and you're on the phone, then I think I start almost yelling because you're not used to, I'm not looking at anybody face to face in a meeting, right? So it's hard to judge.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, I specifically focus on Black women because I've personally done work in this area in terms of becoming a better ally myself based on the current climate and reading a book called Me and White Supremacy by Layla F. Saeed, which is an amazing book about how to push past white privilege, essentially, and become a better ally. And so that example specifically about Black women and tone policing comes from that book, but absolutely it can be cross cultures, and it can go both ways in terms of the extremes of what a tone could be or how someone is displaying themselves in a meeting. But if we bring it back to women specifically, I know when I'm in a meeting, and I'll speak from my personal experience, if I am getting, you know, not necessarily heated, but passionate about something and trying to push my idea forward, I have been called out on my tone, whereas I sit in meetings where the men on our leadership team start yelling at each other and no one bats an eye. But if I were to do that, I would be policed in that behavior. So that's where the difference comes in, where if we look at women, if we look at Black women or women of any culture, the deviation from the norm or what is acceptable for men, that's where the bias comes into play. And that's where, especially with double discrimination, that's where it's compounded, because now women who are women of color or LGBTQ or any combination of difference from a white male, which is predominant in leadership, that becomes a double discrimination against them and is much harder for them to get ahead. Yeah, and this can play out in, you know, with not just racism, as we were talking about in this scenario, but homophobia, ageism, really anything that that people can have prejudice against. This, the compounding effect is detrimental, and should be called out. So as a leader in an organization, if you have the opportunity to bring up these issues, it's really important to start from the top and make sure it isn't systemic, so that it women at every level are treated equally from a people perspective, and that you don't have those inherent biases.
You brought up a good point that I just wanted to ask you maybe a little bit more about, and that's the ageism. I'm you know, the last couple of months, I'm just thinking about it, of if you had the opportunity to hire a 65-year-old woman or a 65-year-old man, you mm-hmm. would probably look at the woman as old, but you would probably look at the man as experienced, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't have so much of a problem to hire an elderly man than opposed to an elderly woman. Is there any insights about that? Because, you know.
There certainly are. I don't have any at the tip of my fingertips mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. but I can certainly dig some of it up. But it's true, and it definitely goes along with how women are held at a much higher standard, mm-hmm. And not even for capability, but for how they look and how we look and how we present ourselves and show up. And if we're, you know, looking at age, men might be considered, oh, they have all of this experience that they're bringing to the table, whereas a woman might be looked at as
tired,
oh, well, tired, right? and so that's where it certainly comes into play. I can definitely, if you're interested, pull some details
please.
On that.
To thank share you. Mm-hmm.
Nicole, yeah. I have a different point I hope to discuss here. Is that right. Okay? We're kind of
absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned three words when you were talking about this. So bias, prejudice, and racism.
Yep.
So when I think about those three words, they are all strong words, but they kind of the severity on a continuum of 1 to 10, I would think bias maybe at 6, mm-hmm. and prejudice maybe at 8, and racism maybe at 10.
Yep.
And I find, like, for example, I would hear someone say, I'm biased because I'm a white man, right? Mm-hmm. It's, so somebody would say that to themselves. But on the other hand, if I were a colleague and I say, you're biased, it's a very strong word to call someone out there. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard anyone say I'm prejudiced or that I'm a racist. and I think those are very, very strong words. And I personally felt the Me Too movement and then the recent movement, I'm all for the idea of the movement. I guess I just feel like now it's so much easier for people to say other people is a racist. Mm. And I felt like sometimes it's just a workplace disagreement. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you mention the word like bias, prejudice, and racist, you kind of escalate it to a whole different level. And it's really, like at that point, it's much harder actually to solve the problem at hand. Mm-hmm. So I guess I felt like we need to be very careful about when those words can be used
And it should be used only for situations that warrant, because otherwise we're not solving the problem at hand. I guess this may come from my Asian woman side, and I'm always trying to diffuse a conflict or try to anticipate a conflict and try to direct things not to go that way. And so, yeah, I guess, and another point is that you earlier on and said, we are all in a bias trap. And I find just because I'm a minority, it doesn't mean that I cannot be a racist or I cannot be biased. Mm-hmm. And when I first came to Toronto and I went out to look for a rent an apartment, and there was a staff, like I was looking for a one bedroom apartment. There was the staff who looks at me. She's not much taller, but somehow I can never forget that feeling that she's looking down at me. It's like, you can't rent a one bedroom apartment because you have a child. The child must have its own room. You have to rent a two bedroom. And that person is a woman and is a minority woman who has darker skin color than me. And in Canada, in my 20 years in Canada, there were few moments I felt being discriminated upon, and that was one of the moments. Yeah. So yeah, I guess I just want to raise that point here and hear what your experience have been and what others have thought about this.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it, and the lived experience is definitely something that is hugely impactful. And like you said, 20 years ago, and you've never forgotten that. And I think we could have a whole, you know, multi hours long conversation about this specifically. I think to your point, though, everyone has their own internal bias, and I think the purpose of, you know, what we're doing here is, yeah, we're going through scenarios that maybe all of us have experienced in different ways, but it's understanding that we are not immune to having those biases. And there is definitely on the scale from bias to racism, there are subtle differences, but it is quite a fine line. I think the main thing here is that I'm not saying to, you know, go and call someone a racist or go and call someone, say you're being prejudiced or you're having bias. I think it's being able to recognize that and then doing things to counteract it. And whether that means to, you know, call them out by, you know, pointing out a double standard potentially and say like, oh, would you say that if so-and-so said that or if a man said that, just to get them thinking. But there also are escalation paths in organizations. If you're not comfortable speaking out, which not everyone is, at least you've recognized it and then can, you know, go through the proper channels to counteract it. And another thing that comes into play here is that women are often, which is a much bigger issue, but women are often penalized for bringing up these issues. And I've found that personally where, you know, I had an experience where, you know, something happened and I escalated it. And then I was being spoken to like it was my issue. And that's where we really need champions within organizations who are going to, you know, come together to make change as opposed to one person kind of fighting on their own. Because if you're in an organization where these sort of biases have been acceptable for so long, it's going to be really hard for one person to actually make some movement. And that's why like workshops like this or what I'll talk to later about, you know, continuing the conversation are important because it gets everyone on board and it really has to start from the top to make that trickle down effect. But I really appreciate the story. I think it's really important and, you know, your lived experience shows up in so many different ways and being, you know, a minority and coming to Canada and also being a woman, it's absolutely compounded. So thank you for sharing. Kelly, were you going to jump in?
No, go ahead. It was interesting too, because Caroline had a story there, and this was one that I know my dad owned a company years ago. And especially at that time, you had the receptionist at the front mm-hmm. desk, and it was a Black lady that he had hired. And the problem was with her is that the phones would be ringing. She wouldn't answer it. She was sitting there filing her nails. She would bring nail polish, mm-hmm. do that. He would come out, the phones were ringing, and I didn't feel like answering it. So he had to let her go. Well, she filed a human rights complaint saying that he was racist. And, you know, luckily he had all the back, like all of his documents and everything with this going through. And one of the points he had made was, well, if I was racist, would I have hired her in the first place? But it was just interesting how sometimes some of those things just turn on you. Because as Caroline kind of brings that up, is that it's all those different, you know, bias, prejudice, racist, and it just escalates things. So sometimes we really have to be careful how we use some of the terminology ourselves.
Absolutely.
But it's also being aware on our end, kind of our thought process too.
Yep, exactly.
Can I make a point as well after I listened to you and to Caroline? Because I want to make the point that you're right. Because I was thinking, as a Black woman, how sometimes I want to jump to that if I have something happen, an experience. And from what Caroline said, it maybe not always, may not always be racist, but I think sometimes it's that feeling that you automatically, I think just from my experiences in life, I automatically jump to that. And that story you gave me made me think about that. The first thing I would say as a Black woman is that it's racism, but you're right. We have to kind of step back and say, is it? And, you know, I was raised to understand there's the double discrimination. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how my mother talked to me about things that you have to look out for. And so you don't always know, is it because I'm a woman or is it because I'm a woman of color? Which is it? And I, you know, there's some situations that you really don't know. And I think Caroline made a point about looking at the three words, the bias, the prejudice, discrimination. And I think I can say that I automatically, well, not automatically in every situation, but almost always think it's race. And I think it's because of the way I was raised and the experiences I've lived. And so I think this is a good conversation to have to understand that you're right. It may not have been a racist decision or because someone's racist. It really was due to things, you know, that really happened. But I guess I wanted to really say thankful for having these kind of calls that we can talk about it. And kind of understand, you know, where it's coming from and hear different stories and people's thoughts around it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, I would say in a situation like that, and it's one of those things is that, you kind of feel bad that some people have to think that way. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't have to, right? We should, it shouldn't be because of the color of your skin, your gender, whatever. It should be qualifications, the things that you bring to the table. And exactly. And I think that's what makes us as a society so much better. If you can accept all of those differences that everybody brings.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jackie, for sharing. It's very powerful, and I definitely appreciate the perspective. It's an important conversation to have. And I think if you, are questioning, should I be saying this is racism or about race? Maybe look at the evidence, because if someone else has done the same thing who maybe is not Black or is of a different gender or whatnot, and they are not, don't get the same reaction,
right.
then you can build the evidence to say that yes, this likely is racism or is not.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We need to allow people a learning curve, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that we Chinese is a very homogeneous society. We haven't had a lot of opportunity to live and work alongside with other people. Mm-hmm. It is a learning curve. We need to be able to learn here, to be assertive and to speak up, but not go all the way up to be very emotional. It's a learning curve. I still don't get it right. I guess I just felt like we need sometimes, I guess we need to assess the situation, is that is this person on somewhat of a learning curve, and instead of all the way assuming that person is biased or prejudiced or racist, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'm cognizant of time. Can we keep going or?
You know what? I was going to say, I've seen a couple of people I knew had to drop out around 9:30, but if you're still able to, you can definitely stay with us.
Okay.
I have to drop, but thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us, Jackie.
All right. We've only made it through about half of the scenario. So I'm going to jump into this one. So a colleague recommends a man for promotion over a woman, saying, I'm not sure about her long-term commitment. She just got engaged. She may want to have kids soon. So we know that this happens all the time. Women are, you know, there's assumptions made about them, about their commitment, based on what's happening in their personal lives. And it unfairly limits her opportunities. And this is also illegal in many places. I personally sat in on a job interview when I was in my 20s and was asked directly, when are you planning to have kids, which is highly illegal. I did not take the job, and it was the CEO of the company. So this is very prevalent, and it's very unfortunate. So I would say, and based on the findings, suggest that she should decide for herself what's going on. It's really no one's business in her personal life how it's going to affect her career, and if she wants to take on new challenges, then she's more than able to. And if you're feeling bold, you can also, you know, point out the double standard, saying it's hard to imagine we'd say the same thing about a man who recently got engaged. And studies have shown that when women get engaged or married, the maternal bias sets in at that point. So it's not even when, you know, they might not even be planning to have a family yet, and maternal bias sets in, and whether it's conscious or unconscious, people start to question their commitment. And it's based on that mistaken belief that women can't be fully present if they have family responsibilities at home.
Now this is interesting though, because it goes back to a little bit of the stats that you talked about earlier regarding there is that shift. Mm-hmm. And even Susan brought that up, is that there is that shift that men and women are starting to take over some of the responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And there are changes in that. So I wonder how much, this still obviously is very prevalent, but yeah, I think it may start to change a little bit too.
Absolutely. I'm seeing on even now, and I think it's actually become more accepted now that we're all at home and there are, you know, kids in the background or on our laps or whatnot. And I see even with my male colleagues, they're engaging with their children while on, you know, work calls potentially. And so I think this has maybe pushed that shift to happen even quicker, because everyone's at home and it really needs to be split. But it's also highlighting that, you know, if both parents are at home and all the kids are at home, who's doing the share of the work while also working in their career? And so it's an important dialogue, but definitely there is a massive shift towards moving away from normative gender roles in this area. Great. So the next one, a manager describes a woman who reports to her as overly ambitious when she asks for a promotion. So this comes back to, you know, women being criticized for competing for promotion or stretch assignments. And if she is criticized, it can have a negative impact on the entire company, because if a woman asks for a promotion and she's told, you know, why are you so ambitious or you can't do that, other women are going to see that and they're going to hear that message and they might not go ask for a promotion or a stretch assignment. And then that disadvantages the company as a whole. And really the women in the organization may not feel valued. And when women are assertive in, you know, speaking in a direct style and promoting their ideas, they often get a negative reaction, whereas in contrast, men don't. So what to do? Prompt your colleague to explain her thinking, but also say, you know, generally, I think we like ambition in this company, so why does it bother you in this case? And then you can also bring up that, you know, it might be a more company-wide issue where, you know, women are penalized for seeking promotions and criticized for that. You could also talk about the double standard about, you know, how do you feel when a man on your team asks for a promotion? And this, of course, happens because of stereotypical expectations that women should be selfless and giving, and then they face criticism when they appear to be out for themselves and assert themselves. And this is part of the likability penalty in which women are described as those words we talked about before, like demanding, even difficult to work with. But men don't experience the same sort of bias. All right. So any comments on those last two scenarios, or I'm going to keep powering through? Great. So this is our last scenario, and then we'll talk about our takeaways here. So in a meeting, the client only looks at and speaks to the men on your team. And I'll share a personal story here. So I was in a meeting with clients and our team, all men except for myself. I was delivering the presentation. I was the expert in the room. And the client, who was a man, directed all his questions to the men on my team. Would not look at me. Would, you know, if I posed a question, he would answer them. And it actually became almost a game for me to see, like, is this person going to make eye contact with me? And it was an extremely frustrating experience. And I left feeling so deflated and invisible almost that, and you know, I'm a senior leader in my company, and I'm leaving this meeting feeling like I'm, you know, very unimportant in this. And I actually wrote a LinkedIn article about the experience when I left, because I was just so, you know, riled up about it. But this happens all the time where women are, you know, seen as either less junior or not as knowledgeable about a subject. And it also signals who's important in the room. And in this case, and in this scenario on the screen, it's the men. And so women, when this happens, some will, you know, continue to try to assert themselves, which is wonderful, or pull back and stop contributing. And that's where it really affects everyone, because then she's not able to share her ideas, but then the company also doesn't hear them. And the team itself is not putting the best foot forward.
So I have a question, sorry, Nicole, in that situation, did your team members notice that this was happening?
They did not. Are we okay? I think you can go on mute. Let me try that. Is that working?
There you go.
Perfect. They didn't. And it was something when I left a meeting and sort of did some reflection about it, it prompted me to have a conversation with my boss who was in the room. And I asked him, did you notice this happening? And he didn't. And I think that's also part of the problem, is that because men don't experience this, they don't actually recognize when it's happening. So if there was another woman in the room, I'm sure maybe she would have said something or helped the situation, but the men didn't even notice it was happening. So I had a conversation with him and I said, look, this is something that happens all the time, not just to myself, but to all women. And so if you want to be a champion, you need to recognize this is happening and also call it out and do your part to make sure that it doesn't happen. And I actually shared this exact scenario with him from this presentation, saying, you know, do your part to make sure that you're making eye contact with everyone, but also purposefully bringing women into the conversation, especially if they're leading a presentation. There's absolutely no reason why that person is the subject matter expert shouldn't be, you know, addressed. And then pass the baton and call it out in such an overt way, saying, you know, Susan would be the best person to answer this. She's our resident expert on the topic. And hopefully with those messages, the other people or the people who might be having this bias or you know, doing these actions, something might click and say, oh, maybe I should be actually acknowledging this. So it was a conversation, but it was actually pretty eye-opening to me to realize that they were just completely oblivious to it happening at all, which is why we need to speak up about it.
Yeah, I have an interesting story similar to that. Like, it's not a work-related one, but I was buying my first car, and I was 23 years old, and I knew exactly what car I wanted. And every time I went with the salesman, if I went with my dad or it was my boyfriend at the time, they refused to speak with me.
Yep.
And finally, I said, they're not spending the money. So I said, you either look and talk to me, or I leave and I do not buy this car from you. And I had one guy and it was the closest area, and I ended up leaving, buying the car somewhere else. And he called. And when he called me, I said, you refuse to talk to me. He said, I've already purchased a car.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was an interesting situation.
Yeah. It happens all the time, not just in workplaces, like case in point with your story, but it's unfortunate that it's still happening, because I mean, obviously in the last even 20 years there's been a shift in you know, more women at work and getting rid of like the normative gender roles and women having a lot of spending power, and we're still experiencing this where in these scenarios. And I've heard countless stories like that where you know, you might go with a friend who's a male who has nothing to do with the sale, and they're the ones that get talked to. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nicole, I want to share a story on the other side. So I met an employment counselor who was counseling like new arrivals in Canada to look for a job. So she had this man who came in, but who sit with the back to her and said, because of my religion, I cannot look at a woman. So I cannot face you. And this employment counselor, she's also very good. She says, I'm going to make you turn around before you leave here. So she just, with him back facing her, she gradually coached her to the point like to realize, if you go to a workplace, you will have to deal with women. And if you cannot face me, you cannot you cannot find a job. And the man finally turned around. So I guess, again, I'm just thinking, so was like, for example, in Kelly's story, that the I had that kind of situation too. When you do business, when it's considered as a man's business, not a woman's business, then people just talk to the man until they realize the woman is the one paying. That's one thing. The other side is that if someone coming from a religious background, that they cannot look at a woman, and also making eye contact. I grew up in a culture that we don't make eye contact, especially you don't look at your elders or people who are higher than you in the eye. That's like very, very disrespectful. So I guess I go back to my point of allowing people a learning curve. So the eye contact part, I can also kind of testify, if some Asian people, like men or women, if they don't make eye contact, it's not that they are disrespectful or they are shifty, they are not trustworthy. It's because
culture.
They haven't learned it yet. I can tell you, when I first started to learn that, and it actually scares me when I realize I'm looking at someone in the eye, I was going, what do I do? It's like, it's very uncomfortable. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a great point. There are certainly many cultural differences that that have so many caveats to everything we're talking about today. And especially, you know, in a city like Toronto, where we are such a mosaic and we deal with people of all different backgrounds constantly. I actually just saw something. We are the most multicultural city in the world, which is fantastic. But to your point, we need to acknowledge that there might be some differences in how people have behaved potentially in the country they come from, or how they were brought up, or even just, you know, culturally within the city. So it's a great point, and definitely one that needs to be acknowledged. So thank you. Great. Before we move on to our takeaways, does anyone else want to share or comment? No? See, we're a small group now, so let's talk about our one action. So this is where we're going to, you know, put what we've learned into place. And these six scenarios are really just scratching the surface. There are 50 of them in the program, but of course there are probably hundreds of more scenarios that we could talk about. So really, we have barely scratched the surface today, but wanted to give you examples of what women are seeing in the workplace, and also tips on how to combat it. So if we look at our one action, I want you to think about what you're going to do either in your workplace when you see bias, or one thing that you've learned that you're going to share with others from today. So take a second to think about that. And then I want you to write it down. And this is going to become your one action that you're going to commit to and take away. And I know I've sped through this, but if you're comfortable sharing a learning, I would love for you to share with the group.
I would say one of my biggest things, and you know, it's something that I know I have done and I have seen, but it is, especially when women get spoken over or they make the suggestion, just having that opportunity to stand up and say, oh, you know what, that was, Susan made that great point earlier, and I really liked it. So, and you can even just say, obviously, you really liked it that you brought it up again.
Yeah.
And just be able to do that and advocate for mm-hmm. one another, I think, is one big thing, as long as we can kind of have each other's back a little bit.
Exactly. Beautiful. Yeah. Anyone else want to share? No? All right. Great. Well, take that one action and talk about it and do it. And the great thing is that you can continue this conversation. So, you've committed to your one action, and what else can you do? So be a champion within your organization. That's the key here, because it needs to start somewhere. And so if you see that there maybe isn't someone in your organization who's really pushing this forward, you can be that person and call out bias when you see or hear it, if you're comfortable. If not, go through those escalation channels, but also you can be an ally to a new mother or a woman of color or new hires, or strong women who might be seen as abrasive. Be that ally for that person, so that when you are in meetings together, for example, you are there. And Kelly, to your point, like, do it together, and it'll make the change. If you want to continue the conversation in your company and they need to, you know, look at this from a different angle, fighting gender bias is good for companies. There are countless studies that show that women in leadership positions increase the bottom line. Forbes has done studies, McKinsey's done studies that there is actual profitability associated with this. So if that's the conversation you need to have internally, then that's what you can use. And online at Lean In, the program's free. You can go download it. All of the scenarios I went through today, plus, you know, there's 50 of them. And you can take this into your organization. And so I will leave you with a quote from Sheryl Sandberg. We cannot change what we're not aware of. And once we are aware, we cannot help but change. So thank you for having me today. I think it was a really good conversation. And I know we potentially deviated a little bit from the slides I was going through, which I think is fantastic because that's the conversation we need to be having. And so thank you. And thank you, Kelly, for inviting me to speak today. And just let's keep going and make that change.
Well, thank you, Nicole, for taking the time to go through this with us. And one of the things is that that's kind of what we're known for is a lot of times deviating and taking the conversation to in our own directions, which
it's
is always
great. I like it. Yeah.
So it is good. I always say this is a group that's never shy to bring up some of their own points. And on that, it's October 1st. We're going to have Carmen Kutiger from IBM. She's going to come in and speak. I'm just waiting for the topic. And then in November, and this kind of hits on something that you talked about earlier, the lady that's going to come in, she ended up switching kind of her role. She was an executive and she was trying to fit into her job into things. And I think with this pandemic, a lot of things have really changed how we do things, but she's going to be talking about how to negotiate work that works for you. And it's kind of how to negotiate your hours, how to find a job that actually fits into your schedule for yourself. And she has started an organization or a company called Tellent. So T-E-L-L-E-N-T. And it's about placing women into roles that work for them. So those are the next two I'm still working on from December on. So if anybody has any ideas or any speakers or anything, or if you want to talk, please let me know. And we have a lot of things going on our calendar, so please check them out. At that, I'd love to wish everybody a wonderful day. It looks like the sun is somewhat coming out a little bit, so fingers crossed. So everybody have a great day, and we'll catch up to you later. And thanks again, Nicole.
Thank you. Bye.
Here, bye.